body. Look at the body. I'm on the floor, you up the door. Looking amazing, my amazing baby. Way there.
It's been a while. I saw your face. Let's not talk about it. Anything else? Whatever you need.
You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM online at WFMU.org. Thank you so much for joining me today, for welcoming me back. Thank you to the lovers and former lovers who called in, who heard but maybe couldn't call in. I do want to check up on you, so maybe we can talk next week, or feel free to send me an email just to see how we're all doing, how our hearts are doing. It's been such a pleasure reconnecting with you, and thank you for being part of the energy that's pulled me to this new vantage point, this new place, and I welcome in lots of love, grace, forgiveness, righteous rage, and healing for all of us. Let's keep up all the good fights, the essential fights, and more importantly, the fight for our humanity so that we continue to fight for each other and dismantle all these generational traumas holding us back. Up next, we have Is It Soup Yet? With Alan Harding. See you soon.
I just had to taste. Now that was the birth of our love affair. And since then it's grown a thousand times. You're the sweetest thing that love can bring. And I'm so glad that you're mine. It's wonderful to be in love with you. It's so nice to know that you love me too. No one in this world is perfect, but you're the closest to perfection as one can be. You are my inspiration. You're the other half that makes the whole of me. Compliments to you from all the people who know how you brighten up my world. And you keep it bright every day and night. You are just quite a girl. It's wonderful to be in love with you. Oh yes it is, yes it is. It's so nice to know that you love me too. Baby, ooh baby, I wouldn't leave you if I could.
Yeah. Today's special is Memphis Soul Stew. We sell so much of this, they're gonna make some Frisco hot stew. Give me about a half a teacup of base. That's our bass player from Macon, Georgia, Gerald Jamont. And now we need a pound of fat back drums. Bernard Purdy, ladies and gentlemen, on the drums. And 4 level tablespoons of ball and Memphis guitar now. Carnell Dupree from Fort Worth, Texas on the guitar. Pinch of organ. Billy Preston on the organ. One thing that we must have if we're gonna make Memphis Soul Stew is just a little pinch of Memphis horn.
Here I am. Back at it. Is it soup yet? My name's Alan Harding. I'm going to regale you with some, I teased the show last week as per our agreement, and this is the meat show. The meat show. M-E-A-T, not M-E-E-T. And I want to read this before I forget, like I did last week, and I'm glad I didn't catch the ire of any government agency or my boss. You're listening to WFMU at 91.1 FM. WFMU East Orange, in New York City and Rockland County, where I'm from, at 91.9 FM, and online, yes, the radio is in the computer at WFMU.org. In case you have never been with me before on Tuesday at 6 o'clock, this is a show all about food. And it's a call-in show. The phone number is 201-209-9368. Write that down, because I very rarely say it, but I'm going to be reminded again today. And don't call in yet. Let me get going a little bit here. I was in traffic getting here, and I walked in at the wire. Is DEFCON 1 worse than DEFCON 4? Yeah, we were at DEFCON 1, but I made it, and I'm very pleased to be here today. So, to review and summarize, the show today is about meat, because on Friday is the 4th of July, and to me, that is a meat holiday. It's all about meat. I'm not all about meat. I'm about vegetables. Last week was the vegetable show. It was a great show. Great show about vegetables. Today it's going to be about meat. And I'm going to start the discourse with I wrote down a menu. Now, etched in stone menu. I don't even know if I'm going to cook it. But a lot of people have trouble putting together things, and I'm really good at that. So I want to give you a broad schematic of what I consider to be a ideal picnic menu for the 4th of July. Beginning with the beginning, first item. And we're going to discuss these at length. I'm going to open up the phones after I read the menu, and we'll see if there's any interest. If not, then I'll just go through line item and explain basically how to make all of these things in my imperfect way. Okay, so this is a 4th of July barbecue by Alan Harding. First item, pulled barbecued pork served on potato rolls. Second item, no carrot slaw. No carrots will be harmed in the making of this slaw. My mom would never put carrots in her slaw. Whenever you buy grated cabbage at the supermarket, it comes with this little mystery bag of carrots right in the garbage. Don't use it. Next item, charcoal grilled marinated chicken, and that's a whole bird cut up. And the bird is like a 2.5-3 pound chicken, and it is what I like to call spatchcocked, which is not a familiar term to a lot of people. It is to me. Spatchcocked sounds to me something like that would happen to you after you met up with a woman of ill repute in a Marseille sailor bar after you just gotten off a freighter from South America. But it's not. Spatchcocking is a method of cooking, cutting a chicken, which is basically down the backbone, and then you spread it open and you have a whole bird that's basically butterflied. Next item, black-eyed pea and mustard green salad with a very light mustard vinaigrette. Next item, fresh corn, tomato, and basmati salad with fresh mint and basil. Next item, cornbread. That's going to be quick. Everyone knows how to make cornbread. Last item, bread and butter pickles. We discussed that at length last week. You'll have to refer to your notes. Or if you're adept at the computer, you can go to the archive and go back to the vegetable show and listen. And there's a bread and butter pickle recipe in there. For dessert, my soon-to-be famous trademark pending Fred pudding. But we're going to kick that up a notch, if I can say that, with marinated berries. I'm not saying what kind of berries. Marinated berries and whipped cream. Or as the Germans say, mit Schlag, which to me is a softer whipped cream. But that being what it is. The phone number today, as always, is 201-209-9368. If you want to discuss any of those things, I'd be happy to get into it with you. If not, I will move on to the first item, pulled barbecued pork. Pulled barbecued pork is made with a cut of meat referred to, and I looked this up last night in my meat buyer's guide, which was one of the textbooks I was given when I graduated from culinary school. And it is a USDA catalog, basically, of all the different animals that are sold in Department of Agricultural markets, and the different primal cuts of them. And the primal cut we're dealing with today is called a Boston butt, which is right next to the shoulder. And if I'm correct in my etymology, the shoulder is the cut of pork that is most used in the Latin American dish pernil, or pernil, if you're prone to the phonetic spelling. The pork. It doesn't matter where you buy it. It's pork. If you can get heritage pork, by all means, go spring for it. If not, buy regular old Nebraska corn-fed box pork at the supermarket. I'm going to say it's about 7 pounds, 7-8 pounds. And when you take it out of its plastic, you're going to notice that it is practically white. It is encased in fat. And in my humble opinion, it's too much fat. The butt itself is riddled with fat. And you're going to see, we're going to talk a little bit about degreasing and getting rid of the fat because the pork itself is fatty enough. So what I like to do is I take a really, really sharp knife, a long knife, and I peel away as much fat as possible. Try not to get any meat with that. Little meat is okay. There's plenty left. So after that piece of pork is skinned, basically, of its globular fat, which there is a preponderance of, then I like to score it. And that's like taking a pointy, sharp knife and cross-hatching all sides of the pork with like half-inch cuts. You're going to make it like a checkerboard. And after that's done, then you're going to pat it dry with some paper towels, and you're going to make a spice mixture with cracked coriander. We discussed cracked coriander, brown sugar, salt, freshly ground black pepper, a little cumin if you want, not necessary. I like to use granulated garlic powder. I find that's really nice. I take all those spices, of which I'm going to generate about 2 cups, equal proportions. A little heavy on the salt, and of course it's kosher salt. Going to massage that into the meat generously. And if you want, you can take like the bottle of French's mustard, that yellow mustard that's always on the refrigerator door. You can take your gloved hand and squeeze some of that mustard into the palm of the gloved hand, and then like rub it onto the gloves, you know, like you're rubbing lotion into your hands. But you're basically getting mustard all over it, and then massage the mustard all over the outside of the pork. That gives an ideal medium for all those spices to stick. Then, after that's done, take your trusty 12-inch cast iron skillet, heat it up, moderate heat, and sear the pork on... Well, it's basically a box. So how many sides does a box have? 6, I just learned, 6 sides. So you're going to sear it on 6 sides, paying attention to the cross-hatching. You really want to render and get the fat out of that you didn't remove, get as much of it out of the outside of the meat as possible, right? Okay, so we got a 6-sided pork butt, nicely browned. That goes off to the side. Then in your casserole dish, the one that's like 4 inches deep, you're going to take a white onion or a red onion, a big giant onion, peel it, slice it into 1/2-inch slices, lay that down on the bottom of the pot. And then I like to take, you're going to say I'm crazy, I like to take an orange and do the exact same thing with that. Or if you really want to get crazy and you really want a nice flavor profile to the barbecue sauce we're going to make, or actually the barbecue sauce we're going to doctor, I would use a grapefruit. And you don't not want to use the whole grapefruit, just a couple slices. That goes in the bottom. The pork goes on top. Next piece of kitchen equipment you're going to need is your blender. And into the blender goes a can of beer. And if the holidays are approaching, which we all know there are, you will should have that around the house. If it's dark beer, that's fine. If it's light beer, that's fine. Whatever beer you want to use. Or if you make your own beer, as some of us do, not myself, but some of us do, you can use some of your own beer. If you skeeve beer, or you're one of those people that lips shall never touch alcohol, now's the time to break out a root beer or a Coca-Cola or a Fanta. I think, is all Fanta orange? Yeah, a Fanta, an orange soda, or a orange crush. That goes into the blender. So that's a can of beer is 8 ounces. To that, we're going to add a cup of molasses, blackstrap molasses, a cup of ketchup, a cup of mustard, whatever mustard you have, half cup of brown sugar, and a half cup of vinegar. That goes in the blender. That goes, you press one of the buttons or a number. Maybe it's grind, maybe it's puree or frap. And you're going to blend up all that liquid. You're going to dump that on top of the pork or around the pork if you don't want to wash off the spices. Then you're going to put that casserole dish into a 350-degree oven, covered tightly with aluminum foil. Or if it's that really nice casserole dish that your mother-in-law gave you that has the tight-fitting lid, by all means, use the lid that came with the pot. I think if I was going to use the lid, I would probably use the aluminum foil too, because I want all the moisture to stay inside. Into the 350-degree oven we go for 3 hours. 3 hours, 350 degrees. At the 2 hour and 45-minute mark, I like to pull the pot out of the oven, take off the top, take off the foil, look and see what I got, put it back in the oven, let it brown up a little bit. Then it comes out of the oven at 3 hours, and then it has to sit. It's got to sit for about an hour. And before I let it sit, I like to take the part of the pork that was sticking above the liquid, the one that's going to be all brown and caramelized and stuff. And somehow, if you can, if you have one of those big giant forks, spear the pork, turn it upside down, and let the other side that was at the bottom of the pot be exposed to the air, because that's the one that you're sure is cooked. The top, it might not be as cooked as you want. It also might be a little dried out. So we're going to let that moisten up in that cooking liquid. Then the rest is easy. You take the pork out. You put it in one of those, aluminum pans, you know, like they have the baked ziti in at the church picnic or whatever at the church picnic. And you put it in the pan. And then you break it up with your hands. Big chunks, pullable. You know, this is where the pulling of the barbecued pork comes in. You don't actually pull it. You more sort of break it up. And you'll see there's all sorts of different pieces in there. Some are harder to pull than others. But basically, you want to shred the whole thing. You don't want to shred it into dust, but you want to shred it. So Now we have a pan of pork devoid of any sauce. The sauce is in the pan, and that pan pot of sauce has sat for probably an hour, and you'll see a fair amount of fat on top of that pan. And that's when I like to go in with the ladle, and in conjunction with the ladle, I like to use the big giant measuring cup with hot water in it, because every time you pull out some of that fat, you put the ladle back in the hot water to rinse it off, so you're not diluting it, and you're probably gonna pull half the liquid is going to be pork fat. Now, if you want to save that for something, you can. That would be good fat to use for the cornbread. Although, when I make cornbread, I like to make it so a vegetarian could enjoy it, so I don't need to have pork fat in my cornbread. But it would be a good fat to use in cornbread if you're putting fat in your cornbread. So that's the pulled barbecued pork. That gets covered up with foil and put in a warm spot, basically ready to go. And as you're cooking, you know, as you're grilling stuff at the barbecue, you can alternately put the pan onto the coals and warm it up. But basically, pulled barbecue pork is at room temperature or slightly warm. And those go on the, if I can mention a manufacturer, Martin's Potato Rolls, my favorite. I like Martin's Potato Rolls. We got a call? No calls. Crickets. Can we trot out the crickets? We're going to work on the cricket sound. This is something we worked up when there's no one calling and it's just me left to my own devices to yammer at you, which is lonely. The phone number today is 201-209-9368. I find it hard to believe that no one was inspired by the menu. But, you know, menus are hit or miss. What are you going to do? What can you do? I guess we'll move on to the... we're going to skip over the slaw because that's in the archive, the famous archive. I will gloss over the slaw, though. We have a call. God bless you. Thank God. Hello, you're on the air. What do you got?
What I got is that when you... Oh, first of all, hello, love the show, thank you. Is that when you mentioned spatchcock, it took me back, and I just wanted to address that briefly and then go.
It took you back to what? When you were a sailor?
Well, my stepfather
always in Marseille?
Spatchcocked the turkey at Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
On the grill. So I became familiar with this process, which, as you said, it's somewhat splayed out. And you mentioned it, you know, I was excited when your show came on. It's time for me to make dinner for my kids. So, and you said it's the meat episode. I said, okay, because I'm a vegetarian and have been for about 14 years. But I have no problem with meat. And I'll cook it for others because I'm usually the guy that's cooking. And so I did just that in the memory of my beloved stepfather who died of old age at a very fine age to die. I made a spatchcock turkey last Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And I just wanted to express, it's just weird how being a vegetarian distances you from the physical element of eating meat.
Yeah.
Dealing with the turkey in that way, which, as you know, means essentially breaking its dead back and then ripping its spine out, it was intense for me. It was hard, in a way that I didn't anticipate. And I just wonder, in our listening audience, if other vegetarians have experienced this, you know, dealing with meat in such a visceral way, making it for others. They loved it. It was delicious. We brined it overnight. I brined it overnight, you know, butter under the skin, did all the good stuff.
All the bells and whistles.
And absolutely. And they loved it. But there was something about me about doing this like chiropractic move you got to do on the turkey body to get it to lay flat like that. It was kind of hard for me. And I'm not typically squeamish.
I don't know what to say. If you want to stick around after the show, my office is always open.
The door is always open.
Well, I'm just grateful that you didn't. I mean, you could have spatchcocked the turkey when it was alive. That would be egregious.
Right. Let's see. Maybe that'll happen when the you know, some turkeys will be pardoned this year and some will be spatchcocked.
Exactly. Thank you for your call so much.
Cheers and good night.
Thank you. We got a call. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Alan. I just made a marinade for chicken breasts, which so I felt kind of in sync with your recipe for the pork marinade.
Let's hear it.
It's actually thin sliced chicken, lemon juice, salt, pepper, a lot of garlic powder, curry powder, ketchup, and honey.
No fat.
Fat?
Yeah, oil. To me, a marinade has oil in it.
Okay. Yeah, no fat. I mean, I kind of thought the...
it's a fat-free marinade.
The ketchup is a little bit greasy, and but I guess it doesn't have fat in it.
Wow. Well, if it works, if it works for you, it's
night,
great.
And it actually works pretty well.
That sounds delicious. You know, since we're just two guys talking in a bar...
Sure.
If I was going to make that marinade that you just mentioned, and there's a certain Southeast Asian rhyme to your thing, have you experienced the joy of red curry paste?
No, I haven't.
Check it out, bro. Red curry paste, and try that instead of the ketchup.
Okay, great.
Unbelievable. Good. Unbelievable.
Okay.
Unbelievable. Thank you. Thank you for your call.
Okay. Bye.
I have the if you wanted to turn the barbecue marinade slash barbecue sauce that I just mentioned into a different vein, you can pretty much use all the same ingredients. Substitute white vinegar with lime juice or rice wine vinegar. Add the red curry paste. Add some fish sauce and some soy sauce. And into the blender with, if you can follow me, into the blender goes a big giant chunk of fresh ginger. And some fresh garlic, maybe some lemongrass, and you have a Southeast Asian a barbecue sauce that would be excellent with the pork as well. And then I would change the seeds. I would put maybe a little star anise, ground star anise, and what else? I don't know. Szechuan peppercorns. Love Szechuan peppercorns. Those, my engineer beer making friend, would be banging in a beer.
Star
anise. Szechuan peppercorns. Totally different than regular peppercorns. Don't ask me where to get them. Oh, well, we know where to get them. Kalustians, the go-to spice market. Now we're moving on to the spatchcock chicken. Spatchcocking, we've discussed pretty much at length. It's basically slicing down the backbone, leaving the backbone on, and splaying open the chicken. And at that point, you're going to grill your chicken on charcoal, hardwood charcoal, lump charcoal. Not a great fan of the Kingsford. I like the natural hardwood charcoal. Doesn't seem to be that much more expensive. Burns a lot better, burns a lot cleaner, tastes better, smells better, less processed. It's more sustainable. Have you? If you're into sustainably produced charcoal, which might be a niche market. The interesting thing about this chicken is it's going to be cooked 80% of the time of its cooking, the whole cooking is going to be on the rib cage, meaning the bony side, the inside of the chicken. The outside of the chicken is, you know, where the skin and the meat is. You want to kind of preserve that. You don't want to get that going on the grill really hot. We're going to go rib cage down, okay? And if there's any questions about this, because I do tend to veer into the arcane sometimes, the phone number is 201-209-9368. You can call up and ask me to say, and you can say, whoa, what is that? What is that? What are you talking about? What is that? What is that word you just said? And I'll roll it back for you, because that's how I do things. I want to make sure everyone knows how to have the basics of solid cooking methods. And if you have the basics, man, you can do anything. A good sharp knife, a nice piece of wet paper towel underneath the cutting board so it doesn't skitter across the counter. Makes sense, right? Yeah, these are all basics. All right. Garbage can close by. Make sure the floor that around where you're working doesn't look like a feed lot when you're done. You know, keep everything on the table. If not, throw it in the garbage. So our chicken is on the grill. Now, the marinade. Oh, we have a caller. You're on the air, my friend. Sprecken.
Hello?
Sprecken. Yes, talk to me.
Hey, how you doing? I'm just hearing your spatchcock description, and I know you're going through the chicken processes and wondering if you had touched on the beer can chicken yet.
You know, that's only something I've read about. I've never done it, but, you know, there are those that would like to screw a beer can into the back end of a chicken and prop it up and cook it that way. I haven't tried it myself, but...
Well, that's exactly how it goes down. You did describe it perfectly. I will say what is nice about it, if you take your delicious sounding barbecue sauce recipe you described earlier, have a big stash of it and just continuously the beer, you know, it's cooking up through the chicken, it does make for a very juicy.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you saying we got three callers, so I want to move on, but Are you saying that the can of beer that goes inside this poor chicken is a full can of chicken, beer, unopened?
You're going to drink off like about a quarter.
Oh, and you leave it open. So it's like a steaming beer volcano inside the chicken.
And cooking into the chicken the whole time.
Had no idea. But I'm going to move on if that's okay.
All right, your show's great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I love to hear that. Hey, you're on the air. What do you got? Or you were on the air. You are talking to Alan Harding, and this is It Soup Yet? You're on the air.
Nope.
We had them, and we lost them. We lost them in the computer. Okay, so let's talk about this marinade for chicken. Marinade sauce. This comes from the Cornell College of Agriculture. And I'm going to say the recipe dates back to about 1920, probably before. If someone knows the exact date, I'd be amazed if anyone can tell me. And this is when chickens were called roasters or pullets. And every 4th of July in Ithaca at Cornell at the Agricultural College, they would have this giant chicken roast, and they would make these giant grills out of cinder blocks and wire mesh that were like 100 yards long. And it was basically a low grill with charcoal in it, a ton of charcoal, and a ton of chicken, a ton of spatchcocked chicken on the grill. And it was brushed with this, I don't know who came up with it, man, but it's really good. And I'm going to give you the recipe right now. This is the Cornell College of Agricultural Chicken sauce slash marinade. Basically, something you brush on the chicken as it's cooking. Or if you want to let it sit, let the chicken sit in this before you cook it, you can do that as well. It is the following. I'll make this in the blender. I'll get to that after this call because I want to make sure we don't lose anyone. Hi, you're on the air. What do you got?
Hey, how's it going? I just want to say that I'm a long-term listener of WFU, and it's the first time I've ever heard this show, and I'm really appreciating it a lot because I cook a lot myself. And I just want to thank you, and I'm wondering, I just discovered something called Celtic Gray sea salt, and are you familiar with that? Did you ever work with it?
I have not, no.
It's really just incredibly amazing. I mean, kosher salt is the go-to for most things. But
yeah.
The crystals are so huge that it just really just, you know, impounds the flavor of something, especially like pork. And my gosh, your description of your pork butt is just really just great. And I know it's hard to talk about cooking to other people, and you're really good at it, and I appreciate it. But
wow, thank you so much. That's so nice to hear. It's easy to for me, it's not that difficult because I just review the things that I've done, and I just like kind of see it like as in a movie, and
right.
I just try to give you the broad strokes of the movie. But thank you very much. Celtic sea salt.
Yeah, just like a salt with like really big crystals tends to, import a lot more flavor.
Yeah, when you're seasoning with that, when it's all done, are you like biting giant crunchy granules of salt?
Oh, no, it completely dissolves in something like a pork butt.
Wow, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, it just really gets really into the center. It's amazing. So that's, just my thing. But everything else you had to say. Everything you had to say about your pork butt recipe is absolutely right on. So
thanks a lot. Give it a shot, man.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Hey, happy cooking.
Okay, so moving on to the marinade. Again, we're going to use the blender that we used for the barbecue sauce. You're going to rinse it out. Into that blender, you're going to put 1 cup. And this is for 1 chicken. If you're doing 2 chickens, this is one recipe per chicken. So if 2 chickens, double it. 3 chickens, triple it, whatever. 1 cup of olive oil. I like to use the pure olive oil, or the, I think they call it pomace, which is the second pressing after the verdant green olive oil. If you only have green olive oil, knock yourself out. 1 cup of olive oil. 2 cups apple cider vinegar. 3 tablespoons of salt. 3 tablespoons of poultry seasoning. More about that in a minute. 1 teaspoon of white pepper. And 2 whole eggs from a chicken. Now, poultry seasoning. Oh, we have a caller. You're on the air. What do you got for me?
Hi, Alan. How you doing?
Can't complain.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take a slightly different tact, but it is kind of going on a parallel track. Oh, first of all, it started off with a very primal memory of going to my grandmother's house exactly at this time of the year. And the kitchen was blazing hot, and she opened the oven and pulled out a rabbit in a flat pan garnished with apricots.
Oh.
And it was absolutely mind-bendingly delicious.
Wow.
Well, I hung on to this memory forever, and I'll jump forward 35 years, and I was in Italy, and I was staying at this estate in Tuscany, and there were a lot of people there, and I volunteered to be the cook. Okay, I didn't really know what I was going getting myself into, but I realized my mistake once it came out of my mouth. But anyway, there I was. So I went to the supermarket that was called Co-op. It was about halfway between where we were and Siena. And lo and behold, they had rabbits. So I said, I guess we're having rabbits for dinner. So I bought three. And, well, first of all, I bought all the raw ingredients for what I thought I was going to do. And I took them back to the estate, and I was in this huge kitchen with a picture window, and I was preparing a dry rub for them. They weren't spatchcocked. I don't think you spatchcock a rabbit, but they were gutted. And out the window over the Tuscany hills, I could see a storm brewing. What we had originally planned to do was have a barbecue, because there was a really nice big grill. But it very soon became apparent that that was not going to happen. And I was getting really worried. But fortunately, the huge farmhouse had a fireplace with a, you know, one of those things. It's like two Ys with a piece of metal on it.
Oh, yeah.
And
I know what
a crank.
Mean.
What do you call that?
The two Ys with the crank and the metal, you know, thing. Yeah, that's what I call it.
Yeah, well, anyway, I don't know what the hell that thing's called. But we, as it's pouring outside, we skewered the rabbits straight, and we just, like, there was always someone minding the rabbits, so they twisted around and around and around. And we ate roasted rabbits in Tuscany while it was pouring rain, and everyone was happy. After that, people wanted me to cook every day, and very soon I rebelled, and someone else had to take it up.
So, you know, I'm prone to the minutia. First question is, what was the marinade for the rabbit?
Well, I didn't want to make something that was overly greasy. So what I tried to do, if I remember, this was our 1997, so my memory is a little foggy at this point. What I remember doing was just chopping onions and garlics and all the fresh herbs I could find. And believe me, at this supermarket, there were a lot of them. And I put them in this big, huge tureen, and I just constantly massaged them. But they also had a full stock pantry, so I just availed myself of that, and I put everything I could find in. And I figure, what could have... I was a little worried about using fat, because I could see that the rabbit had quite a bit of fat on its skinned body. And I didn't want that thing to happen when you're grilling, when all of a sudden you have grill fires.
Right.
But then we didn't even have to worry about that, because we were turning them on the spit. That's what it's called. It's called a spit.
Oh.
You know, and they were good, and I never repeated it. I did it only once, and it was quite an experience, and everyone loved it, including me.
And there you have it.
And that's just like, it's like one of those one-time encounters in your life that you get to fully live to your fantasy about whatever it is. And in my case, it was wabbit.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, Alan, this is Eric from La Buya Base. How are you, man?
Bro, what's up?
How are you? Hey, I was just about to call you earlier and tell you about the chicken marinade I grew up with up in the Southern Adirondacks, and it's the Cornell marinade.
See?
And we grew up with it known as Brooks barbecue sauce.
Oh, Brooks barbecue's in Oneonta.
Yeah, so we got it from them. My mom had a handwritten card in her recipe book, and that's what we grew up with. And if it may not sound like the most incredible marinade, but it is the best chicken marinade there is.
I feel vindicated.
Yes.
Well, you want to hear something even more interesting? I was at Tops supermarket in Tannersville last week, and they sell that sauce in a bottle, and it's labeled Cornell barbecue sauce.
Oh my gosh, the people have spoken, and it really, if you can get it or make it, it really is amazing.
It is amazing.
And it's something we grew up with in upstate New York, so.
Unbelievable. Thank you very much.
I highly recommend it. Yeah, okay, have a great fourth.
Thank you. Thanks, bro. So we have the basics in the blender, and I talked about the poultry seasoning. Now, poultry seasoning, you could probably buy McCormick poultry seasoning. I don't know what's in it. You have to read the ingredients. My favorite poultry seasoning is made by a company called Bell's. And you'll see they bring out the Bell's poultry seasoning around Thanksgiving. And it comes in this little box. And it's got a picture of a chicken on it or a rooster or something. And it's kind of an old-fashioned woodcut. It's a very interesting piece of ephemera, and I always, whenever I see it, I buy it because I like the packaging. But the interesting thing about Bell's poultry seasoning, which I really like, is when you open up the box, there's no like envelope in it or something that you have to get a scissors to open. It's just poultry seasoning in a box, right? It's like crazy. And their poultry seasoning is heavy on the sage, which I think is really important to this. So all of those ingredients that I mentioned before go into the blender, whiz it up a little bit, put it into a Hellman's mayonnaise jar, a glass jar, empty. And into that goes a working marinade brush, you know, the one with the coarse bristles in the little metal cup, and you stick the brush in there, and you use that when you're going over to the chicken. You bring the whole jar, whisk the sauce up a little bit, and brush the chicken liberally with it. And you can't brush it too much. After the chicken's been cooked a little bit on the rib cage side, I like to turn it over for a minute and douse that whole side because it's hot and it drinks up the marinade, and then put it back and then put some on the top. And then, you know, go about your business doing whatever you're doing. Come back to the chicken, keep brushing it. And after the chicken is done, one more good dousing on the skin side, and then the chicken gets put onto the grill, skin side down, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, to crisp it up and give it some marks. And man, that chicken is so good. I think chemically what happens is the egg cooks, the egg that's in the marinade cooks and makes like a protective crust on the chicken, and drags all those spices and flavor onto the bird, which is absolutely amazing. You want to kick it up a notch? You want to kick it up a notch into the blender before you add all that stuff? And this isn't on, they don't sell this at Tops, but I put in a good quarter cup, half cup of fish sauce, and some of that red curry paste that we talked about before, maybe a little ginger, blend that up and use that to brush on the chicken. It is so good, man. It is like a Southeast Asian, something that you'd get from a street vendor in Phnom Penh, you know? Absolutely delicious. And, you know, once the chickens are marked, they get off, they get put in the aluminum pan, and then you can just kind of like tear them apart or put it on the cutting board and whack it up into eighths or sixes or however many pieces you want. I've even taken that chicken the day after the party and pulled the chicken off the carcass and used that as a chicken salad, which is ethereal, to say the least. We have a caller. Please talk to me.
Alan, it's Jorge.
Jorge, chef.
How are you, chef?
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a chef calling.
I know there's only a couple minutes left, but sometime I'd love to if you did a show on roasting a chicken.
Okay, all like, right. Let me write that down.
Roasting. Let's write it down.
Whole like, chicken. I'm not being facetious, my friend. I need fodder for the cannon, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, this show doesn't write itself, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a properly roasted chicken. This is why I always appreciated Jacques Pepin, you know, his, not the name drop, but just to watch him work. And one of the things that the way he just roasted the chicken,
you're doing good, buddy. Keep going.
Well, you know, there's some tricks there, I think, you know. Not taking it, turn the oven off and leave it in there for a little bit, you know, and let it vaporize.
Let it come into its own.
Yes. But I called a little late. Sounds great.
And, well, I name dropped you in spirit anyway. We were we digressed briefly into the area of Pernis, of which I know that you are not a hobbyist in the Pernis department.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, and I heard the pork. I was like,
the pork.
All right. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
Love you, brother.
I love you, brother. Bye.
So we got to spatchcock chicken. Got through spatchcock chicken. I'll probably close. I should close with the marinated. What do you say? Marinated berries for the dessert or the black-eyed peas? Black-eyed peas, thank you. Okay, so the black-eyed pea and mustard green salad is, you know, when you go to the supermarket, you see a bunch of mustard greens. You're gonna bring those home. You're gonna wash them. You're gonna chop them up. You're gonna saute them in garlic, salt, pepper, olive oil. Sear them till they're all wilted. They go into a bowl. They cool, chop those up finely. To those mustard greens, you're going to add a bag of black-eyed peas that you cooked. Don't use raw black-eyed peas. I got to say these kind of things, man, you know? The equivalent of canned black-eyed peas. And if they're using canned black-eyed peas, please strain out that nasty liquid and put them in a colander and give them a rinse. If you're using cooked black-eyed peas that you cooked yourself and you want to put a little, as they say in the French kitchen, mirepoix into your black-eyed peas, which is basically carrots, onions, and celery diced up, a little bit of that. Braise the peas in liquid or a flavorful stock until tender. And then chill them, drain them, chill them, mix them with your mustard greens, mix them with a simple mustard vinaigrette, which is basically two parts vinegar, one part oil, big scoopful of Dijon mustard, maybe a little raw garlic in there in the blender. Use that to dress the black-eyed peas. At that point, you can go ahead and, can I use the word, aggrandize your black-eyed pea salad with, if you want, halved cherry tomatoes, fresh corn, whatever's growing in the garden, maybe some green beans that you cut up. Knock yourself out, man. Have a great 4th of July, everyone. Remember, take care. Brush your hair. Stand tall. Thank you.
And now we're going to have a little dash of Mississippi Conghetto.
WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City, and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, online at WFMU.org.